You're listening to AKC's Pick of the Litter, where we bring you canine culture, dog people, and news you can use. I'm Lisa Peterson. Coming up on this program, search and rescue teams. Wilderness search and rescue teaches many of the basic skills that service teams need to perform effectively. For this program, we decided it was time to join the action. 90 pounds of German Shepherd dog is hurtling toward AKC staffer Stephanie Smith. But don't worry, it's all for a good cause. Stephanie and I, along with Pick of the Litter producer Sarah Montague, recently spent an afternoon with Penny Sullivan and James Pearson, president and vice president of the Ramapo Search and Rescue Association in Mahwah, New Jersey. Ramapo uses German Shepherds for wilderness rescue and has a rigorous training program. Sullivan and Pearson take us to a secluded, wooded area near a local college campus to demonstrate.
This site is a very good site to start a dog, a younger dog, because it's relatively open. We don't need the densest of brush to start a dog. To begin with, we're basically just working on those drives, building his play drive, and making the whole game of finding someone just the most fun he can have in his whole life.
They have each brought a dog. Pearson's big male is called Gamma, and Sullivan's smaller bitch is Katana.
We're going to try to demonstrate successfully the use of the German Shepherd dog in the search and rescue operation. But before we do this, we're going to train a helper, which is probably the most important part of getting a search and rescue dog up to operational level. They reinforce the reason why a German Shepherd dog works in the field, and that's for reward and play.
That's a good boy. That's a good boy.
At this point, what we'll do is we'll have a tug toy, which is what the puppy or the dog would get as a reward. We'll be having Stephanie Smith of the AKC being a helper, assisting us out in the field today. All our dogs are socialized as puppies from 7 weeks old, and it's always positive training. And as a helper, this is what makes it so critical, because in the real search, the victim would not have a toy. The victim could be someone that is not alert. So what we try to do in this form of training is to reinforce positive training. We're trying to establish an indication.
An indication is a dog's way of alerting to a find, such as barking or returning to his handler and then leading him or her to the victim.
Okay, Stephanie.
Be sure that you hold the ends of the tug, and what you're going to want to do is tease him up with it, but don't let him get it initially. We want the dog to give that final indication. In Gamma's case, he does a bark alert.
Okay.
So we don't want him to get the toy until he's barked.
Okay.
So with a young puppy, you would keep teasing him to elicit even a little squeak, and then you would give him the reward. Gamma knows the game. So we want you to hold it away from him until he gives you a number of good, solid barks. Then you can just give it to him.
When you say tease up, move it upwards and walk backwards?
Move it around a little. As soon as he barks and he's done some good barks, mm-hmm. you're going to present it forward to him
Okay. And
let him get it. You can actually step back, but he grabs the middle of it.
Okay.
All right?
And that's your indication. Yeah, and then tug it around, play with him, say, good boy. You can hold it with one hand, and then pat him on the head. Yeah, say, good boy.
Both Gamma and Katana get their chance to retrieve the solid pull toy, which looks like a big sausage.
Good girl. Good girl. Yeah, thank you for saving me.
Now it's time to move on to a simulated rescue.
The way we approach an actual search is we're assigned grid areas. And these are air-scenting dogs, which is really important to understand. They're not bloodhounds that do tracking, but they actually smell the human flakes of the body, which are millions of flakes a day. So the strategy behind this is we take an advanced dog that's operational, we have a gridded area, and we work with the wind. The wind is always coming towards the dog. That way, the flakes of the human scent is coming towards the dog.
Pearson and Sullivan lead us to a secluded grove.
We're going in the woods.
In the deep, dark woods.
It's like a game of hide and seek, but for higher stakes.
One of the challenges and the beauty of having a dog is that they can cover areas that you can't cover. Mm-hmm. And if someone is passed out and they're behind a tree and you're walking one direction, the dog actually does sort of a cone search. And so if I'm walking down a path, I have this dog that has, seems like 360 ability, where I'm just going one direction.
Stephanie, the trainee helper, will act as victim.
You could try to pick a dry spot.
Well, this is good over here. I mean, it's just, you just get the true feel of it. So, yeah. So what I would like you to do,
okay,
our helper, we're going to place you over here.
Pearson tells her how to play her role.
So to be clear from the beginning, you're a non-responsive victim.
Okay.
Okay, and that means that if the dog comes up to you, and he may come up and go like paw you a little bit, he may nuzzle you a little bit, but then he'll sit back down and start barking.
Okay.
And then you don't move until I come up as a handler and say, good dog, and that's when you give the toy to the dog as a reward. And that completes the whole cycle.
So what we want to make sure of is that when he comes in and finds you using his nose, he can't then root around and be able to grab the toy from you until he's barked.
Can we hide it under the mat and I can sit on it?
Definitely.
Yeah, but how about
this? But he will root for it, too.
Okay, how about this? If you were like this, put it like this, you go like this.
I could do that.
And then usually a
victim... He's going to nose you.
Yeah, he'll nose you. But if you just cover up like this, he's not going to take it away from you until he starts barking. He'll come in and he'll grab this thing, and I'll guarantee you that I'll try to hold your feet, okay? because you will be
dragged into the wilderness.
No. There goes that white shirt.
We are about 100 yards from the road, and for a while all we can hear are passing cars. Then suddenly,
okay, good boy. All right.
Good boy. Good boy.
Lots of praise.
Good boy. Such a good dog.
Yeah, good boy.
Good boy.
Good boy.
Good boy.
Good helper.
Say that one more time.
As a handler, you have to read your dog. And I saw when he hit Stephanie's scent out in the field, he paused and he puffs up his chest. He lifts his head up boldly, like, you know, a noble beast, and he just goes right into it. So it gives me goosebumps every time I see that.
Gamma and Katana are praised for their good work and loaded back into the cars.
And now to complete the exercise, Gamma takes his toy back to the car. He wants everybody to play with him. Play with him. Feel the force.
We follow Pearson back to an attractive carriage house that he's renovating. Around his kitchen table, I ask him and Penny Sullivan how Ramapo got started and what drew them to rescue work.
Well, back in the 70s, a group of us that were also members of the Northern New Jersey German Shepherd Club were showing the dogs in obedience and also doing exhibition work. But we decided we wanted to do something a little more with the dogs, something that would be of service also. So we incorporated actually in 1971. And as such, I believe we're, if not the oldest search dog unit in the United States, we are at least one of the very oldest.
I did have a question about German Shepherds in particular, because many times people ask me, you know, they think, oh, why not use a scent hound breed, like bloodhounds or beagles or foxhounds? You know, they were bred to do scenting. And people don't naturally think of German Shepherds or Belgian Malinois or dogs with prick ears and long muzzles as being good as scenting.
Basically, in a search, there are two types of searching. You have the air scent and you have the tracking scent. What we do is that we train our dogs for air scenting.
Yeah, actually, we know that the dogs in our environment work very similarly to bird dogs.
Interesting.
Our dogs are trained to work off-lead, just like your hunting dogs. They quarter back and forth. They learn to do that on their own. But the difference is that our dogs are looking for human scent rather than the bird scent.
I mean, I just watch them work out in the field, and to them it is, it's like a big fun game. It's like a big hide and seek kind of game. You know, they get rewarded with something that is fun and positive for them just by doing their job really well. And it's a really fascinating process. How long does it take to train a search and rescue dog from the time it's a puppy to when it's, you know, in the field and can find someone? Or is it an ongoing process throughout its whole life?
Well, in order for somebody to become operational, we say it usually can take up to 18 months, especially if the handler is new at the game. The dogs know how to do this on their own. We actually basically are following along behind the dogs and just trying to keep up with them.
Handler training, how long does that take? I mean, the handler has to go through certain processes. Is there training you do without your dog that also helps with the dog?
Well, as Penny wisely pointed out, the dogs know what to do. It's the handlers that we have to train. That is probably the major obstacle in getting good handlers because it requires that they get incident command system grades, which takes time. You have to become proficient in map and compass. You have to do a series of hikes. You have to become certified as a first responder, and then you also have to be able to get a CPR. And then once you have that, you can move off into working with the dog and finally getting up to evaluations. And we do a series of in-house evaluations that meet a high standard. For a final evaluation, we get outside evaluators.
There are many people that really would love to do it, but they don't realize the time commitment.
Let's talk a little bit about the temperament of the dogs and also the temperament of the handlers. What kind of person and what kind of dog would make an ideal search and rescue team?
Great question. It takes a bit of luck in everything, but it takes a real desire in the heart to come out to do it. People that are patient, people that love their dogs, but people who also have a commitment. And that's a commitment for safety, for their community. There's so much we're learning every day that we're learning, and that's the kind of attitude that you have to have. Getting operational is only part of it. When you go out and really do it, that's when you really start learning.
Overall, too, you have to have the time. In the beginning stages, you may not be doing the very long problems, but you must be doing repeated small problems again and again. And then the other training that we mentioned for the handler, that takes an inordinate amount of time.
Why have you selected the German Shepherd in particular for this work?
Well, although nowadays there's many breeds that are used for search and rescue work, but we started with the German Shepherd, and we do feel he's an ideal dog for the work. He's got the double coat so that he can be protected from the elements in all types of weather. He has the size and the structure that's ideal for the wilderness so that they can get over and around all the different obstacles, fallen trees, boulders, etc. He's got the intelligence and trainability. I think that's number one to us. Basically, you want a thinking dog. The dogs must be obedient in various close situations, but you also want somewhat like the seeing eye in many cases. You want the disobedience when necessary. You want a dog that can problem solve. That's one of the reasons we love the German Shepherd.
I mean, look at the eyes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the operations and how you're called and how you help the community with your search and rescue activities?
Well, our dogs are trained to find any human scent that's out there. It can be a lost hiker, a hunter, an elderly person. Actually, lately we're getting a lot of calls more and more for Alzheimer's patients. And we will get a call from an official agency, sheriff's, a law enforcement, or whatever, who would be in charge of a search. And when they have a missing person, they will call our unit and request the dogs. We cannot respond to family members although we do ask them if they have a search and want our help to advise their law enforcement agent of the group. Mm-hmm. But once we get the call, we then put the wheels in motion and get our handlers that are already trained and operational in the field as soon as possible.
It can certainly be very emotional. And also for the dogs. I've watched them work today, and they get, you know, really wound up and very excited and lots of fun. So, you know, there's a lot of emotional ups and downs with this work. How do you deal with that sort of angle to being a search and rescue handler with your dog?
Well, you go out there and you think what your strategy is on approaching an area, and you try to be extremely professional about the situation. It's very tense. If it's looking for a lost child, you have parents and you have the police, and everybody wants a good outcome.
Well, overall, I think it's just very, very rewarding, although there are the down parts. Obviously, we get called when we know the subject out there very likely may not still be with us. But it's so important to the family to at least know what happened. And I think for the handlers, whether you do find somebody alive or unfortunately deceased, it's still such a rewarding thing. You've worked with this dog for 18 months or more. You train constantly. So when you and your dog actually are responsible to go in there and find somebody, it's a high.
So during our field expedition today, my coworker Stephanie Smith at the American Kennel Club was a helper, and she was given instructions on how to help train Gamma during an actual training exercise for a search and rescue. It was your first experience as a helper. What did it feel like being discovered by this dog?
I was face down in the woods, so I didn't really see anything. So I guess it was a typical victim experience. But I heard him come in. I was expecting him to come one way. That was the way we walked in the woods, but he had a better idea and came crashing straight towards me. And then I first heard him bark very close to my ear, and he pawed at my arm to alert his handler. So I waited until Jim came by, and I heard him say, "What have you found? What have you found?" And then give him the good boy sign, and then I was able to give him his tug toy. To kind of reward him for a good job.
Would you like to do this again, to be a helper?
Absolutely. It was a very fun experience. When I came out here today, I wasn't expecting it. But it was very amazing to see how they work and how they train the dogs.
And it's such an incredible bond, man and dog working together.
We say goodbye to Pearson, Sullivan, Gamma, and Katana and head back to Manhattan. Stephanie looks a little worse for wear after playing the role of victim, but no one on the commuter train gives her a second glance. With the presidential election looming, Warner Brothers Studio decided the public was ready for the lighter side of politics.
You know what? Actually, I have a baby. I need to kiss. Like, that's my baby to kiss.
You know what? Excuse me, please.
Oh, you don't take a swing at my hair.
The campaign stars Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis as Cam Brady and Marty Huggins, Southerners who are battling each other for a congressional seat. The film pokes fun at undignified election tactics, and dogs are part of the action. Huggins has pugs until his campaign manager replaces them with Labradors, which he says are the highest polling. And Brady almost knocks out Uggie, canine star of The Artist. We want to hear about you and your dogs. Since we're honoring search and rescue dogs on this program, tell us about a time when your dog was a hero. You can write me at asklisa@akc.org with your dog's special story. We'll be featuring some of these on future programs. You've been listening to AKC's Pick of the Litter. I'm Lisa Peterson.
AKC's Pick of the Litter is written and produced by Sarah Montague and Lisa Peterson with Stephanie Smith. Our recording engineer is Paul Ruest at Argo Studios, and our mix engineer is Jim Briggs III. Our theme music is Peter Schickele's A litter of perfectly healthy puppies raised on fried pancakes from Thurber's Dogs, courtesy of D-Note Classics. AKC's Pick of the Litter is presented by the American Kennel Club.